Warning, this pod will contain spoilers for the following movies: Summer of 84, Blade Runner, Star Wars Episode 4, Star Wars Episode 5, and Scarface.
We're just okay and we play some movies. We're just okay.
Movie watchers.
Welcome everyone to another episode of Just Okay Movies. I'm your host Biggie Size and I'm joined by
Guido
and Wally.
Fellas, how you all doing today?
Oh, pretty good. Getting pretty excited for vacation.
Oh, that's right. Next week, isn't it?
Sunday, I leave.
How long?
Six nights.
Where are you going?
Punta Cana. Oh, Dominican Republic. Hey,
oh, that's right. Coconut. This is the trip you're talking about.
Well, do you have any movies ready to watch on the plane ride, or do you like watching movies on the plane?
I like to just sit as still as possible with my head forward, unblinking.
Oh.
Until the plane ends, and then all of a sudden you snap into motion like there was lost time, like you're completely normal.
Yeah, it's like I go in stasis.
Yeah.
Very interesting. I like it. I really don't know if you're joking or not, honestly.
No,
I can picture you just not looking at anyone, not looking at the hostess that comes by, just staring straight forward.
I'll peruse my phone and stuff, but I don't really watch movies much on the plane, I guess.
I can't stay focused.
I actually have a really funny story about that. I really loved the movie, was it Lion or something like that, about the Indian adopted kid that found his mother again?
Yeah, Academy Award nomination.
I never thought I was going to watch it, and I loved it, by the way, but I actually watched it by watching somebody else watching it on something else next to me.
Ooh, and that's a good movie for that.
No sound, just subtitles.
Yeah. That's all you and need,
I got sucked into it, and I ended up watching the whole goddamn thing. I had nothing else to do. I'm on a fucking plane, but I actually watched the movie, and I really, 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 I should probably watch it normally at some point, but I really did like
that guy.
No,
hated you.
You probably got the most out of it. Yeah, you don't need to watch
lady,
it.
And she didn't know I was even there. Normal.
I did that with the Kingsman movie, the sequel, and I couldn't tell because I was like at an angle. I was like, is this like a Bollywood movie? Because like some of the scenes like had like the shittiest looking CGI. There's like this one scene I was watching and they're like on a, what do you call those like little things that are by wire and they take you up and down a mountain and they're like getting flung around in the sky and it looks so god awful. I couldn't figure out what it was until I looked it up later. I was like, that was a really big movie. Why did CGI look so terrible? Maybe it was the angle I was at, but yeah, watching people watch movies and then like looking at them and being like, is this like a movie they're really into? Or they just like pick it, kind of like profiling them a little bit. It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
But Megan loves watching stuff on the plane. I just can't stay focused. Like I even bought like a Vita to play on the plane, but there's just too much like going on and too many noises. I just, even with my noise canceling headphones, I just can't stay focused.
Yeah, you got someone next to you watching your movie with the subtitles on, just like breathing over your neck.
Right. That's a good, yes, that's true. Well, guys, speaking of movies, have you guys watched anything interesting this week?
Oh, boy.
Oh, a lot of crazy shit.
Oh yeah, like what? I mean, just like, faces nothing, of death.
Yeah, faces of death. remember when we were younger and like the only way to get porn was over those like torrent tracker things, and every so often instead of porn, it's like faces of death, and you'd see like a Russian soldier's face get cut off.
Oh my god!
Yeah, and that's the only thing you could jerk off to now.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I have like a whole like it's a hard drive that I keep plugged into my computer of just faces of death movies from like Kaza and shit. Cause that's the only way I can really, you know, feel anymore, let alone get off.
For sure. I mean,
yeah. It's like my alarm sound too when I wake up.
Yeah. Just someone screaming.
Yeah. In this complete horror and pain. and then they die, and then I wake up. Like, my eyes are closed, and the whole soundtrack of the death plays, and then when it stops, my eyes shoot open, and I get up, and I'm fine.
Ooh.
Interesting.
But well, really, I've been watching a lot of Wynonna Earp, basically, on Netflix.
Oh.
And based on the comic, by the way.
That's a comic?
Yeah, it's a comic. It's really good, by the way. It's goofy and campy, and sci-fi manages to capture the tone, because all of sci-fi's shit is goofy and campy and dumb.
Interesting.
Oh, and the mini-apps for Star Trek Discovery as well. I don't know if you've caught those, since you're a fellow Star Trek person.
No, I haven't. I was wanting to ask you about that. How are they?
Fantastic. The first one was a little rough. Second one was really great, actually. I think it's called Calypso. And I don't want to spoil it, because they're essentially vignettes, but they're very, very, very good for like little snapshot story.
That second one has me very interested. I saw the trailer for that, and from the trailer, you know, the guy's apparently, 1,000 years in the future on Discovery, and he's just kind of wandering around. And that had me interested.
I wonder if that's like a way of like conceding how, like, all of a sudden here's like your 5-second vignette, and there's your entire conceit about where the Discovery went and the rest of the storyline canon.
Fascinating. That's actually a really good point. Like, they were using the spore drive, and it just like went off somewhere, or they like mothballed it on some crate or somewhere to keep it hidden for if they need it in the future for some reason. I'm just spitballing here.
I don't know. That's my guess, but yeah.
Well, you bring up a really good point. That's very interesting. Guido, have you watched anything lately?
Oh man, I watched the second season of The Deuce.
What is that?
It's an HBO show, and it has James Franco, your favorite actor.
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy.
He plays two roles, too. Twin brothers, and it takes place in the late 70s, and it's about Times Square in New York. And
that's a great storyline. I love to
see
that.
The porn trading business and peep shows and prostitution, pimps. It's pretty good. Pretty good.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but like Times Square was essentially a shithole through most of the 70s and 80s.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's how it is. And it reminds me of Grand Theft Auto Vice City, just made into like a series.
Well, that sounds kind of cool.
Yeah, lots of boobs. Some of them not so great, because they're like, run-down prostitute boobs.
Oh, yeah.
Used up boobs.
They've been tugged on one too many times.
Yeah. Maggie Gyllenhaal's in it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, she gets naked a few times and looks like, two gym socks full of sand.
I mean, she likes getting naked a lot for somebody who, you know, I'd rather not see naked all the time.
I'd rather see Jake naked than her.
Yeah. But it's good. It's entertaining. It's not the greatest show in the world, but I'd give it a thumbs up. I say go for it if you're interested in like a late 70s period piece. It's an interesting time in New York.
2 out of 3cum shots.
Yeah.
So,
give that a shot.
Oh, definitely. I think I still got my HBO subscription going. The only show Megan and I really, really got into on HBO was The Newsroom.
And yeah.
Really loved that. Almost like to go back and watch it again. I forget the gentleman's
name.
Isn't
that the preachy one?
Yeah, it's very preachy.
It's pretty preachy, left, liberal, but, it's fine. It's not like they don't, some of the points are pretty good.
No, I liked it. I liked the first season.
Really good.
I kind of fell off the wagon a little bit with it. I don't know where it ended up. Is it still on?
No, they went 3 seasons. The first is the best. The other two they're serviceable. Okay. It kind of starts going down, especially on the third season.
It reminds me a lot of The West Wing.
Yes. I think that's probably why I started... Actually, isn't the guy who made it, isn't he the same guy who made West Wing?
Quite possibly.
What's his name? Aaron something Sorkin? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He does those political dramas really well. And West Wing is fantastic. And this isn't even close to it. But if you enjoy those kinds of political dramas, it's good. I highly recommend it.
I don't like the Whiplash dialogue that they have.
I love Whiplash dialogue, which is funny. I don't always, but sometimes if it's done smartly, I like it a lot. And I've always liked it in those kind of shows.
Right.
Yeah.
As long as the characters are good. As long as they're good, then I'm fine with it. If not, if they're characters I just can easily throw off and don't even give a fuck about, then it does get very annoying.
Yeah, but I haven't watched any movies lately that I can think of.
I just watched one that you had mentioned you had seen. And it's a movie called Summer of 84.
Yeah!
And I do want to talk about it for just a moment. Should I not? Do we want to save it?
No. We can talk about it.
I got.
Do you never like anything he likes?
Really about.
Yeah, I
the
just.
The movie?
What? Yeah?
The movie is good up to a point. And this is more of a discussion about tone of a film. And first of all, I'll just talk very briefly about the movie. It's styled like an 80s horror film with the heavy synth, it's set in the 80s, naturally. And the kids are trying to figure out who this murderer is. And one of the kids, there's a murderer going around taking like teenagers and stuff and killing them. And no one can find who he is. But one of the kids thinks it's his neighbor. And they begin doing their sleuthing, you know, following him, gathering up clues and things like that. And, you know, they run through the same problems where they get caught. The parents are like, you're an idiot. You're totally wrong. We're going to go and, you know, make you apologize to him for doing all this stuff. And then, I guess, spoilers, maybe skip the next 10 minutes or so. The kid was right. It was him. So throughout that part of the film, it feels real like, you know, I don't know, maybe like a Stand By Me or whatever that kind of style film where it's fun to follow him. You feel bad for the kids when he gets smacked in his face by his parents who don't believe him. But then after they solve it and he proves that he is the killer, the film takes a drastic shift in tone from this sort of play. And I hated that.
I loved it.
Much. It was terrible.
Did it get a lot darker? Was it like campy? Did it go from like campy 80s to like horror 80s?
Yes, exactly. And it didn't work. Like,
oh, I thought it worked great.
No, they could have done it so much better. Here's how. What happens is the kids are sleeping, and now this is a really, really cool setup, and I loved it so much. It turns out the killer guy he was going to kill the main kid because he was kind of, you know, the kid was figuring out who he was and what he was doing. So he was next on the list. You find that out. And he was hiding in the kid's attic. And like, it's this nice dolly shot getting closer to the kid's room because at the very end of the hallway, and you see the attic ladder slowly fall down. And that was gorgeous. So you're already like super tense, like, oh my god. And he's got a friend staying over too, the big fat kid. So you're like, okay, they could probably take this guy in some sort of scene. Well, he ends up capturing the two, and then they put him in the back of his car and he kicks them out and makes them run for their lives while he's chasing them. So you're like, okay, they're going to have to just formulate some sort of plan to take him down. Great. Well, no, he just ends up cutting the fat kid's throat. And then telling the other kid that he's not going to kill him because he's so pissed off at him, he wants him to have to look behind his back for the rest of his fucking life. And that's basically how it ends. It ends with the kid doing some mundane dialogue that you don't know who's living next door and you don't know how it'll affect your life. Much like how the film began, if it began with that kind of dialogue. But it was such a tone shift.
I thought it was great.
I hated it. No, how it should have happened, should have happened was the kid was looking out at the police cars at the guy's house and they couldn't find him. So you're already kind of figuring out that, okay, this guy somehow disappeared. then it should have kicked into that dialogue, been like, okay, we don't know where he's at. He could be anywhere. And then end it from there and leave out this like slasher cutting kids' throats thing. It's just so out of place and felt
it's
so out of,
yeah,
gross.
But it's, that's why it's good, is because it's out of place. The movie wrapped up is like, it, you know, they could have ended it there, but they didn't. They went one step further because that's how horror movies end. The fucking attic stairs come down and you're left. The credits roll. But they took it a step further and they had him chasing him around in the woods. Nobody wanted to see that fat kid die, man.
No, we didn't, because he was a good kid. All of them were.
Right. So it hit you real hard. And then fucking, God, what is his name? Oh, boy. The actor that plays the villain. I forget his name.
He was great. Oh, my God.
He was
so
that
good.
That delivery of that monologue, that very brief monologue that he gives the kid. He's like got the knife up to his throat and he's an inch away from his face and he's like, I want you to live the rest of your life just knowing that I'm gonna be coming for you. Yeah, you know, and it's such a powerful moment. It was so cool. It was so cool.
It was so unsatisfying. It was. You want the kid to succeed. That's how the film was built.
Yeah, but
tonally.
Fuck you. You know, that's what the movie's like. It's like, fuck you. You know, this is life. These kids went through this thing. There's murderers out there. And life sucks, man. That's what it leaves with.
Honestly, it sounds like a Stephen King novel, which I would probably like.
Yeah, very much so. It feels like that. Yeah, I totally agree. You know.
You want a happy ending.
I wanted the film to lead, the finish on the tone that it set throughout the rest of the
film. You wanted
the
Goonies.
Well, it would, like, you know, it would be like, I don't know, let's pick out like Friday the 13th ending on a dance number. You know, it ruins the tone. Like, you want very few films, I believe, at least I have seen, I felt can really do that tone shift correctly. The one I'll point to, which is the one I shit on a couple of episodes ago, was Blade Runner. It did that tone shift perfectly. Went from a, you know, hyped up, well, not hyped up, more so around the end part, you know, very action-y, guy being chased, very scary, to the very ending being a moment of just, like, dramatic reflection. And that's such a major tonal shift, but it worked for that film because it made the rest of the film feel great. Like, I went through this whole thing, and this payoff is just totally different than what I was expecting. Whereas this film, I wanted this certain payoff, but then it just reversed it just for the sake of reversing it. And it's such a
the
tricky
tone
thing
shift,
to do.
It's there. It's there because that's how the movie goes. For the first 2.5 acts of the movie, you are following this kid along as he believes this man is a serial killer. But he needs to find clues. And you're as the audience, you're not sure. You're thinking maybe the kid's wrong. Maybe there's someone else. Until sure. The moment that he finds out, that everybody finds out that he is. And then the mask is ripped away and the kid is shown like, this isn't a fucking game. Boy, that's what you've been doing. You've been playing a game this whole time. It's not a fucking game. I'm going to kill your friend. And then I'm going to threaten you in a horrible way. That's what I pulled from it.
And that's interesting. And I could definitely see, I could see that point being made. Focusing less on the character and more on the situation. And that he was treating this more like an innocent game, although was taking it seriously. Then at the end, getting hit with the harsh reality that this is real life. And I think I would have taken that into account too, if it wasn't for the original film feeling like not feeling like real life. You know, the whole thing felt very story-like.
That's because they're kids. It's a bunch of kids tossing, sharing nudie magazines, thinking maybe we're having an adventure. We're just looking at, you know, sneaking into this guy's backyard. That's why it felt like that.
Yeah, but I don't think you should change that tone so quickly in the last 5 minutes of your film. That's where you need to be wrapping up that tonality, you know, kind of laying it the rest, not completely flipping it at the very, very end, when that's your final takeaway, it just makes the
that's life the for whole this kid though. Gross. That's life for this kid.
No, I see your point. I see your point. I disagree with it, but I do definitely see your point. You make a good one. Other than that, the film is great, and I would still recommend it. Maybe if you agree with Guido, when they do the fade out with them going to bed, keep watching. If you somehow side with me, when they go to bed, just end the film, you'll feel a lot better. Because if you feel like how I do, that very end will make you a little bit sick. And because kind of it's feeling a little disgusted. I don't know. I see your point.
Yeah,
though,
and
I
it's just, cool that they do that.
I can't get into that. Yeah. If it was a better film, I think I would agree. To me. I like that they tried it. Hey, I got total respect for anyone trying something different and going for it. But I just felt as a small film that was really good and still really good, they didn't have to take such a drastic shift, you know, a risky shift in tone like they did to make it better. Like, it was already really, really good. And but hey, kudos for taking that risk and going for it. I'd rather do that than play it safe, but you had such a good film. That very ending is what kind of made me do like a little asterisk at the end. It's a really good movie, except for that. Yeah.
I think one thing that I maybe we'll both agree on is I loved that the kid very early, pretty much the first scene in the movie, goes into this guy's basement and he's like, oh, this guy's fucking weird and he's a killer. And then sticks with that through the whole movie and then is right. You know, because a lot of times the red herring, you know, that's what I thought when I was like, oh, it's a red herring. He's not really the killer. They're just, you know, making it look that way. And then the kid's going to get abducted by the real killer. But fuck, man, he was right. And I like that they did that with it.
Absolutely. No, everything they did.
I think you guys are agreeing on the narrative structure. It's just the tone shift that you are disagreeing on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I totally agree. Even the very ending part with that kind of revelation, I like. I just don't like how they completely changed the tone. And tone's such a weird thing to talk about because we all interpret
it. Hey, watch your tone.
Exactly. You know? And, you know, what he says at the very end, like, I'm going to follow you. I'm going to make you always look behind your back until it's the day and I kill you, whatever. And I like that. I just don't like the tone in which it played itself out, except for I didn't like him killing the fat kid. That was a bit much for the rest of the film, taken into account. But I agree with you, Guido. The very beginning kind of setting that, ooh, this looks a little suspicious. And the kid's already very suspicious minded because he reads all kinds of conspiracy theories and stuff like that. That's just part of his character. So it makes sense for him to continue to dwell on this. And it is the great payoff that you find out, oh my God, he's right, because the film did a good job making you super pissed at his parents for not believing in him. That was great, yeah. And you want him to keep pushing through. And even the way they go about it's great. You know, I complained about the, what's the movie we watched where they were throwing shit in the pool? What was that movie called?
It Follows.
It Follows, how like stupid they were and how they went about trying to kill that monster thing. But the kids went about it like real smart and like how kids I would think would do it. Maybe, you know, above average kids. I wouldn't have thought of most of that stuff. But it was nice and it felt great. It had good progression and all the characters, it's your typical lot of kids, you know, the kind of cool one, the fat one and the geekier one. They're all there and it's a fun time. And it's just that ending, man. You know,
you should definitely put a spoiler warning at the start of this episode.
I certainly
we
will.
Did spoil the whole movie.
We spoiled like three almost so far.
Yeah, I'll put a spoiler warning for all of those films. My bad, guys. No, but I wanted to talk about it so bad because it's such a good movie. I think if you enjoy that style of film, you should definitely check it out. Because it's a blast, and I can't, you know, they couldn't have filmed this movie for maybe more than like $10 million. I mean, it feels, you know, it's a small, simple story, but it's so well written and well executed, and everyone, maybe except for the blonde-headed girl, who's her acting's okay, everyone feels great and sounds great and does things that fit their character, and it makes you care. So I would recommend it to everyone. I'll probably put that in the spoiler warning too. Check it out, because people should definitely see this movie.
Sweet.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, very good. Well, I say we go ahead and just jump into a little email, because it's actually a really good email, and I like it. I can't wait to tackle it. So the email's from Mandolin Waters, my youngest sister. Hey, Mandy. Hey, Just Okay Movies. I recently watched Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope, for my film class. It was the first time that I've ever watched it. After hearing about how good it is my whole life, I was disappointed. I respect the film and what it started, but I didn't think it met the expectations from its hype. Have you guys ever watched a classic film that you heard about, but it didn't meet your expectations? Thanks, guys. Keep up the great work. Thank you so much, Mandy. And that's a excellent question. Mandy had called me at work and was telling me that she saw Episode 4. And first of all, I was shocked that she hadn't seen it, because I'm a huge Star Wars fan. I had Star Wars movies all over the house, VHS, Blu-ray, whatever. So they were readily available. And I was shocked that she hadn't seen it. And so I was like, why do you feel that way? And she mentioned those same points that, you know, the story didn't feel very cohesive at parts. It, some of the acting was okay.
Exactly.
And it just didn't meet my expectations. And I was like, you know, you bring up a great point. So I guess we'll tackle the Star Wars part first, because it's just an interesting thing to talk about. You know, the first Star Wars, it probably does get overly hyped as a film. Just looking at the film and not what it spawned. It's what it spawned is what deserves all the praise. Because the film itself it's good. It's cohesive. Really, the story behind it's more fascinating than the film itself, that they were even able to make a cohesive film out of the footage that they had, because, as you would hear constantly, Star Wars was saved in the editing room, because the first cut of Star Wars was a disaster. The pacing was terrible. Some of the actions of the characters didn't make sense. It was just not good, so they were able to use that footage and make a solid sci-fi film that was much different than what was around at that time. So I agree with Mandy in that if you're going into it expecting the first Star Wars movie to be the most impressive film in sci-fi history, you're probably going to be a little bit taken back by that. Especially if you're used to, you know, the newer Star Wars films. Even if you've seen Empire, you probably are not going to be as impressed with A New Hope, because Empire is truly a better made film, which is why it's usually up there in the 10s or 20-ish of best films of all time, and maybe more 30s. So, yeah, I totally agree with that. You guys have any thoughts?
I think this is a scenario where mentioned it a few weeks back, talking about horror movies, where when you're going back this far, you almost have to put yourself in the shoes of the audience that's watching it at the time of release, because that's why it is what it is, because it's a spectacle and there's nothing had been created like it before. So that's why it gets all its praise. And then they build a whole world on it, you know? It's a feat of filmmaking. And I agree, you know, acting no good. The story's weird in points. You can tell Lucas was kind of just working off the cuff, especially with how things didn't add up, making Leia the possible love interest of Luke. And we all know how that goes. So, like, he was just like, I got to make some sort of space movie, and then took it from there. Had huge success in the theaters when it released because it was a spectacle, and then took it from there and made this giant empire, pun intended, of sci-fi movies. So that's why it gets the praise, because of the special effects, mostly.
Agreed. Agreed. Wally, any thoughts?
Sorry, I was talking to my wife.
Oh, no problem. No problem.
She came downstairs and walked by me really quick. What movie? Yeah, I was literally talking to her for like the last 5 minutes, and the minute I put my headset back on, you literally asked me a question, and I'm like, are you fucking serious right now?
So. We're talking about, Mandy mentioned that she was disappointed with seeing Star Wars episode
Okay,
four.
Star Wars. Yeah, we were talking about that pre-show. Let me get my notes out here. Hold on.
Sure,
she's wrong.
Hey, that's fine. Let's hear it.
I think it's Star Wars is a franchise that has been built into an expanded universe that has been rebuilt and grown upon over the decades, and then smashed to pieces by Disney, and then slowly rebuilt again into a ball of lore and fandom that is almost incalculable. But at the end of the day, the core idea, the soul of the space opera, the Star Wars as a thing, is encapsulated by the intro, the confrontation, and the climax of episode four. That is the essence of Star Wars. It's almost undeniably fun. It's campy. It's space fantasy. It's laser beams and rocket ships and giant things exploding with a big evil dark lord using a pseudo magic, you know, built upon a foundation of Japanese cinema and other lore making that goes back into antiquity. And it's iconic in a way that so few narrative structures can be while also being innovative. And to not like it, I think, is either one of two scenarios. Either you don't like action or adventure movies and as a premise, or you simply missed the point of what makes it probably one of the most cherished franchises and stories ever composed in a visual medium.
Sure. Sure. I could definitely see that point. I think, you know, it's come down to looking at the film as a whole. I mean, it has a lot of things to like. I mean, first of all, the models and, you know, the space combat and all that is a lot of fun. Still to this day, it's very enjoyable. And it's even neat to see some of the characters, like, I mean, definitely, I forget the actor's name who played Obi-Wan. It's just a solid actor, even though it seemed like he was kind of phoning in this performance. If you read interviews, he was still just a great actor, and it was neat to see him kind of, you know, go from being this little hut thing out in the desert to being on the Death Star and fighting the main villain. You know, that's just kind of it's always a fun progression to see where you started to get to where you are, even without knowing any of the backstory of the character. And, you know, it's little setups like that are a lot of fun and very enjoyable. And I feel like I guess focusing more on Mandy's case, or really anyone's case who's maybe has seen the other Star Wars films and maybe they haven't seen this one yet because it's the older one. You know, I can see why it would feel a little bit of a letdown because it's not as grandiose, but I agree.
It's
with
also
Wally
1979, it was stunning for its time though.
And it still looks good today. Honestly, it's a film that's aged very nicely. I think just over maybe the past 10 years has it maybe started feeling that age a bit. And maybe that's because of the new Star Wars films. And the fact that, you know, no one really wants to think that much about the prequels. But it's a solid story. It's a fun story. But it's no doubt there are some flaws in it. And I would totally agree with anyone who says
there's
they
flaws.
Didn't like it.
It's simple, but... I mean, how deep do you really want to get into like the nature of storytelling? What is simple? What is captivating? What captures the imagination? I mean, sure. there's movies like Star Wars, which has this almost transcendent quality to entertain and in cross generations in terms of fathers passing it along to their daughters and sons and grandchildren, and you know, as something that they experienced and they wanted them to be part of that initiation. That's storytelling. If you can take a story and pass it on to another generation where they can see the empirical value of it and then pass it on to their kids, that is storytelling in its most purest sense, which is where I think it triumphs. I mean, marketing plays a role. I mean, Disney buying it and everything. Now it's a giant cash in. But I'm talking about 1979 Star Wars. it's a story that people want to tell their families about. It's gathering around the fire and experiencing something wondrous. And it has that. You know, meanwhile, you can get something that is ostensibly super creative and ostentatious and amazing, like Titanic or The English Patient, which, in my opinion, is arguably a bunch of hot trash. It doesn't. It's devoid of spirit, and you something like that. That's garbage. And so it's really hard for me to like quantify exactly why. I think it deserves to be given some level of credence or maybe a second shot. But that's kind of where I'm coming from.
Sure. You know, I think ultimately, you know, I know with what she's mentioned and what we talked about, you know, I can see why the film could be disappointing in that, you know, you constantly hear it being built up as just being this fantastic film when maybe they're more referencing what it spawned.
I think the passage of time may have given the film a disservice because it was so amped up so much. Because the real magic of Star Wars is also being able to go in cold. I mean, I don't know, Guido, can you back me up? But I think the general idea of, how envious we can be of somebody who was a blank slate bearing witness to something for the first time. I mean,
especially if they don't get the Vader twist spoiled in Empire. It's enviable, you know?
Yeah. I had the pleasure of my mom and my dad, you know, renting Star Wars and having a movie night with me, because at the end of the day, they're a bunch of weirdos. But much like anyone's mom and dad, you know, thankfully I was lucky enough to be raised by nerds to a degree. So, and they both shook hands on the idea of like apparently making sure I wasn't exposed to Star Wars outside of controlled conditions. So I got to see like little 8-year-old, 9-year-old me in front of a Betamax copy of Star Wars, watching, you know, Luke Skywalker discover the Force uninhibited by any expectations of what was about to transpire. Seeing, you know, Yoda for the first time, because I think they showed me as a trilogy almost. I think by the time I was 8 or 9, I think Jedi was about 4 years distant. And so I could see all that with naked eyes. And I guess that may color my opinion in terms of why I'm defending it so much. But it also dials back again to this sort of raw draw. I mean, the fact that my parents felt the story was so important that they would sit me down and witness it with me just for the pleasure of watching me see it for the first time, that is storytelling that has value.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. No, I feel the same way. That was very similar with my parents. You know, my dad was just like, you want to watch Star Wars? I'm like, okay, sure. And this was before the redos that Lucas did before episode one and all that. On the tail end of it, you know, it was like the final version they released of Star Wars before they completely redid it, you know, with new stuff. But anyways, you know, sitting down and getting to enjoy that from beginning to end. And I guess it's hard because I know Mandy, she was born much later than I was. So you know, she was around when Star Wars was really still growing with the prequels and all that stuff. And
well, kudos to her, though, for giving it a fair shot.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. No, she did great. So I guess it is kind of hard to think about, like, you know, a kid being born, you know, over the past 5 or 10 years, are they going to have the same feeling of Star Wars now that it is probably bigger than it's ever been, with Disney just pumping so much money into it? You've got so many branching stories.
Kids now are just starting with Force Awakens, you know?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's where they're starting. And not only that, they took the entire expanded universe and just broke it over its knee. Right. I mean, all of the novels and the comic books and the video games and all the beloved figures that we've kind of, you know, earned through just collective creative process by what was essentially a creative commons, you know, Timothy Zahn and Grand Admiral Thrawn, who they're, you know, admitting was worth keeping because they're bringing him back in this reborn form, mostly through cartoons. But like, this was, I guess what makes me really upset is that it was a collective ownership, even though it wasn't. But it's like at one point in time, especially in the mid-90s, the late 90s, early 2000s, we all owned Star Wars. We all had our little piece of Star Wars that we earned our keep in and considered it like holy ground. And then Disney came in and basically said, you know what, all that shit? It's fucking useless. we're gonna reborn all of it with like Disney Mickey ears on it, and this is why I'm so skeptical about The Force Awakens and everything. I mean they're good, they're watchably eminently fun movies, but I don't get any of that magic out of them. And I don't know what this says about the creative process and where we are with Star Wars right now, but like Rogue One, I loved it. So the Star Wars stories, those little offshoots, they're fucking gold to me. But the mainline ones, you could keep them. And it's not because I'm angry about Luke not being Luke or whatever. And it's not because I don't like Rey or even Kylo Ren. They just ring hollow to me. I feel like I can hear the cash register ringing. Everyone's phoning their lines. In fact, the only real redeeming aspect about the start, about the new movies and the new trilogy that I like is fucking Carrie Fisher, and she's goddamn dead. I mean, I don't know. It was just really weird to me. I didn't have any connection to the new films at all. So it goes both ways, I guess.
Interesting. Very interesting. Yeah, you know, I'm not, I mean, I can't say I'm not going to go see episode 9.
We're going to go see it. We're all going to go see it.
But I agree with you. It's good. It's fine. They're fine films. You know, 7 and 8. I like 8 more just because they kind of said fuck it, let's do something kind of different, sort of. But I can't say
this turned into like a reverse rant about Star Wars. By the way, I apologize.
No, it's fine. It's a fun topic to talk about, you know, because it's so impactful, and all because of A New Hope. You know, it spawned this Goliath in film that you can't ignore. And it's kind of amazing. It all came from this tiny little film that if it wasn't fixed prior to release, probably would have tanked and we wouldn't have thought much about it. And it was a little engine that could, and it became this massive empire, using Guido's pun. And it's kind of amazing. It's a fun discussion to talk about. And Mandy, I'm happy you mentioned this because I think it's a great topic to discuss.
As long as she's watching it, you know, as long as people are still watching it and it's relevant, then we all win. So.
Right. But let's hit that second topic of hers. And it's one I'm having a hard time deciding. She asked, what was a classic film that you had watched but were disappointed? And I guess we can use classic loosely. You know, I'm not sure what you may want to define as classic. You know, if you want to go as far back as saying, no, any film that's on the same level as Citizen Kane, I'm not really interested in playing that game. But, you know, a film that's normally been very hyped or very known for being iconic, but was, when you saw it, you were a little disappointed.
I got
only one. Oh, go for it.
Go. How about this? It's a little Al Pacino flick called Scarface.
That's exactly what I was gonna say.
Really?
I agree completely, actually.
Oh my god, that's crazy. Yes, I totally agree.
Talk about a long movie that just like is a pain to watch. And it's the only reason it's got this pop culture following is the last like 20 minutes of this giant 2.5 hour long movie.
Absolutely. The film is just, it's a slog. I mean, if you're interested in Al Pacino just going around and doing some gangster things, it's just, you know, in concept, it sounds kind of interesting, but honestly, I agree. It's the length of the film is what kills it. And
yeah,
I look at like, because the way I saw it was like in order. I saw the Godfather trilogy first. I'm like, this is really good. Al Pacino was so neat in this. And I saw, okay, Scarface. Oh, that one's real popular. I'll check it out. And, you know, I don't know if they were thinking the same thing. Like, we're going to kind of do Godfather, although it's hyped up. It's like him starting from the very beginning and just going out in a blaze of glory. And we're going to have it be this massive saga all in one film. And it just didn't work. You know, I don't care about the person. Yeah, it was kind of neat to see him go from nothing to something. But I gave two shits about him dying.
Right. Yeah, same with everybody in that movie. Like the girlfriend is a bitch. And his friend like is a piece of shit also. Like there's no one to root for in that movie.
That's why people like it. Really? I suppose somebody out there that likes that model, because I feel like that's the model for a lot of TV shows too.
Yeah.
And I'm like, who the fuck am I supposed to root? Yeah, exactly. That's why every so often, and you're going to laugh, but like every so often out of all the shows that I pirate or I watch or whatever, I always pick one that's like feel good and dumb to like just turn my brain off, because I feel like every other show is some gritty. Not that gritty's bad, but I just feel like every single show has like everyone's an asshole. The conflict isn't necessarily between a good and a bad guy, but between two bad guys, and what is bad? You know, it runs a little thick after a while. And so, yeah, especially lately. And I hate that shit. And I agree completely. That's another reason why I almost picked Scarface, but I actually picked another one because I wanted to kind of kick some sand around.
All right, what you got? Yeah.
Gangs of New York.
Interesting choice.
I usually like period films, and I really like Daniel Day-Lewis. I just feel like Diaz was an interesting pick for the character.
She sucked.
Okay. Yeah, she was really bad. And I feel like this could have been, there's an amazing film in there somewhere. But between all of the marketing and hype it got at the time, I was just sitting here going, are we watching the same movie? Because it was over 3 fucking hours.
Yeah.
And I just, I know. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that film's relatively regarded for its space. I mean, as time passes, it's fading. But for a while, that was up there. And yeah, I could never figure it out.
Some people list it as Scorsese one of his better ones. Actually, I don't know. I think mostly people don't really care for it in terms of Scorsese films.
But I just know at the time, though, it was like the shit.
Yeah. Well, it was Leo being hot and Daniel Day-Lewis is, you know, a big get for that movie. Cameron Diaz was super hot at that point. It was just like, it was actor. It was like pop celebrity culture put into this weird period piece.
Yeah, exactly. And when you fuck with my period pieces, man, you fuck with me. By the way,
I think the movie itself has a lot of cool moments in it.
Oh, of course. The Battle of Five Points and everything is a phenomenal piece of cinema in terms of like its potential.
Yeah. And just like the soundtrack and the fucking people playing the flute coming out to battle, and the scene where DiCaprio tries to kill him for the first time. There's a lot of cool scenes in it. It's just the fucking string in between it is all frayed and very long. You know, that's tying all those scenes together.
Leonardo DiCaprio ruining another film.
Shut the fuck up, Biggie.
Jesus.
This was the beginning of Scorsese's reliance on Leo, and I just don't understand it.
Wait, hold on. Like, what's the, like, do you not like,
He doesn't like Leonardo DiCaprio at all.
Oh, okay.
He yells. That's all he does. He just yells, and that's drama.
Did Scorsese do The Aviator?
He did.
Did you like it yells. Or not?
No, didn't yells. Spielberg do Aviator?
No, it's Scorsese.
No, it was Scorsese.
I was wondering, did you like The Aviator? I'm just curious.
It was tolerable, but it could have been done better by a more competent actor.
Okay. I was wondering. I loved it, so I was just curious.
Yeah, I like Aviator too.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish I could love it. I really wish I could.
I feel like we're always on the opposite sides of some weird divide of perception when it comes to entertainment.
Anything Leo already goes like a grade letter down for me.
Man,
like
Catch Me If You Can is one of my favorites, man.
Yeah, that's an amazing movie.
He doesn't yell as much in that one, so he's a little more tolerable.
I can't believe you're calling Catch Me If You Can a mess.
It's okay.
That film's like it's almost a classic at this point.
it's fine. I mean, it's fine. It's
just, Hanks is in it.
And that he's the saving grace. I mean, Tom Hanks is just an incredible actor who you can just throw into anything, and it's at least okay, if not fantastic. Leo, people want to make him that guy, but he just can't. He just cannot do it because all he can do is yell and do shitty accents.
Okay.
And it's just disappointing, especially Scorsese doing it. Like, thank God Leonardo DiCaprio was not in Goodfellas.
I know, we're crossing.
That's the one thing I can like go to bed happy is that he's not in that great film.
I know we probably crossed over this ground before, but now I have to know. Did you like The Revenant?
No. Well, I liked Tom Hardy in The Revenant, and I wanted to see his story. The visuals, the camera work, all that stuff was so good.
Okay, say what you want about him, but he earned that one. He earned that Oscar.
He just did a shitty accent and yelled and acted like he was hurt. That's all he did. It felt like Leonardo DiCaprio dressed up in a period piece yelling.
Right.
With some weird accent. And
I see you, Biggie. Tom Hardy,
first of all, I didn't even recognize him because I didn't know he was in the film. And I found out later it was him. But his character felt so like sandpaper. You could just feel the tension, the pain, and the anger in him.
Did you ever see Birdman, out of curiosity?
Yes, I did. I love Birdman.
Okay, so I was just triple checking, making sure it wasn't a director thing.
Is there any Leonardo DiCaprio performance that you like?
Growing Pains.
Shut the fuck up, Biggie.
He was great in Growing Pains. He was a great addition to that show. One of the few character additions to any show that I actually applauded. Anything else? Bleh. What was that? Wolf of Wall Street? Well,
you shouldn't like Wolf of Wall Street.
What about Calvin Candy, dude?
Calvin
from Django Unchained.
No, he was okay.
Oh, shut the fuck up.
The story in itself was kind of lighthearted.
I'm talking just about his performance.
Oh, no, he was garbage. You could put anyone else in that role and they would have been
fine. I refuse to believe that. That entire scene in that parlor.
He did a weird accent, and everyone loved him for it.
Holy shit.
Hey, I'm Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh, wow. They could have just got you to do it.
You got my attention.
Wow.
Wink. See, I can do it. Give me his paycheck. What, $30 million, I'd say, somewhere around there? I don't know how much he gets paid. Give it to me. I'll do it for half.
I'm offended. I promise, for I'll Leonardo DiCaprio.
Fuck him. Although I do hear he's a really nice guy, and I've got to give him props for that, for being a nice guy. But other than that, you're acting garbage, man. I'm sorry.
Leonardo DiCaprio doesn't give a shit about what Russell Waters.
Growing Pains, though. A+.
Yeah.
Growing Pains, man. You peaked. You peaked, man.
Peaked with Growing Pains.
I will give you. I could go on and on, but I think that's a good place to stop that rant. Okay. Scarface was going to be my main one. I don't know if I call this film a classic, but at the time it was like had hype out of its ass. And I was so hyped to see it. My dad and I went and rented it. We're like, this is going to be a great time. It had like, I don't know, Sundance Awards, all kinds of other awards.
Oh boy, here
it was
comes
Crouching
wait.
Tiger, Hidden oh, okay. Dragon.
Yeah, that I can get behind
was
that.
Such, oh my God, it was bad. Like it was just.
Well, I mean, it wasn't great, but. I mean, it wasn't like trash, right?
It wasn't trash. I'll say it had great camera work. The wire fighting and stuff they did over the trees, that was great job, whoever had the rig, all that. Really good work on that part. But the story, I don't remember anything about it except for the end. And it was the end part where I felt the most like a big fuck you to me. And I'm not, I'm, to this day, I don't know why I feel that way, but I just do. But I just sat and I looked at my dad. And I'm like, I just don't see it. I don't see what people are digging about this film. Because, I mean, the popularity of that film was really just a year, maybe less. And, but people were just nuts about it. And I just couldn't, I couldn't see it. You know, yeah. Maybe I need to rewatch it and figure out what I hated about it.
There's but, a lot of Ang Lee movies that are not, that aren't just my cup of tea.
Yeah. You know?
And he made the travesty that is the Hulk movie.
Ooh, oh, God, that was, yeah. I actually almost walked out of that. That was so bad.
That. Yeah, was bad. You won't like it if it's angly.
Interesting. I totally forgot about that.
You get that joke I just made?
Well, I get it. Yeah, I got it. Hey, I get that reference. It's very well done, by the way.
I'm sorry. I don't get it.
You didn't get it?
But
you don't like it? You don't like it when it's angly?
The movie's angly.
Angly? And it's, you don't like me when I'm angly?
Oh, the Hulk. You won't like it when it's angly. Okay, I get it now. Thank you. That was a great segue, because speaking of that, sadly, we lost a person that was very near and dear to every Marvel fan. I'd say at this point, a lot of movie fans as well.
And we're at Stanley. His funeral right now.
The curtain draws up.
Yeah, Leonardo is pissed at me. Yeah, he's sitting up there in the front. Oh, he is so angry. But he passed away earlier this week, and I think I had a feeling it was going to happen because it seemed like his health was really going downhill. Yeah. 95, that's impressive.
That's, of course, talking about Stan Lee.
Yes, Stan Lee. And been a lot of, you know, a lot of love out there on, I think, the Marvel and DC side, just for what he did for comics, you know? I think that kind of, I don't know a lot about the history of Marvel and even comics in general, but I think both sides can be appreciative to his contribution to some iconic characters. Guido, yeah, absolutely. I saw the post you made on Facebook, and that was very nice.
Oh, thank you. Hopefully it gets to his family.
Yeah, absolutely. Guido, anything you want to say about it?
No, like, well, not anything that hasn't been said by a lot of people. He made characters that I grew up with, you know, and had many discussions about, and gave me endless amounts of entertainment with those characters. So I'm indebted to him in some sort of fashion, you know. Great dude. Thanks, bro.
Yeah, thanks for all the stories, dude. I mean, it basically got me through high school without clawing my eyes out.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Oh, very, very good, man. That's very interesting stories. I mean, really, the only ones I know are what were in the movies, but if those are anything to base it on, I've been thoroughly entertained and can't wait to see what else there is to the mine from those great stories. And
if the stories aren't one-to-one, they're close enough that it doesn't matter for the spirit of the intent.
Yeah, it doesn't matter about the stories. It's the characters, you know, and the characters are as true to what he created as can be put onto film. So
we got there finally with Spider-Man.
Yeah, it took a few tries. Although the first, you know, the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man's are pretty close.
Tobey did good, yeah.
Minus the, you know, web coming out of his wrists.
Is it not?
Instead of web. No, he has web shooters, bro. Come on, man.
Yeah. He's a brilliant kid.
Oh, that's right. That's right. He has the gadgets and not the built into him. Gotcha.
Right.
I forgot about that.
You fucking idiot.
That's... Yeah, Spider-Man really peaked with Tobey Maguire, and I'll just leave it at that.
We don't talk about that.
Finish watching the fucking new one, Biggie.
No, I didn't. And the kid's good. The kid, he's great. I really like Tom Holland a lot. But that movie, I just, it was all right. It was all right. Got a little too weird at parts, and I just couldn't keep watching.
You're weird.
Fucking weird.
Dude, don't I know it, man. I've learned that from being on this. But I'm happy you all listen and let me know that. It makes me like, okay, I now know kind of where I stand on things. That's great. But no,
people love telling you.
Oh, yeah. They do, and I love hearing it. Keep it coming. I'll keep the discussion going. That's what I want from this. Lots of discussion. But, you know, Stan Lee, I think he left his, I would say his legacy in the right hands. You know, those hands being Disney, I think they've taken good care of it. And hopefully that continues. But so we'll miss you, man. But I think that just about wraps things up. Guys, thank you so much for listening. We love that you all enjoy this pod, and you know, it would help us out so much if you leave a 5-star review on iTunes. Kind of help us get up in the view of people, so we kind of get up on the charts a little bit, so people are like, oh hey, there's a movie pod, let's check that out. Helps us out so much. But also, if you want to comment about anything we've talked about from this episode or in the past, shoot us an email at justokmovies@gmail.com. also shoot us a tweet at justokmovies, and I think it just about does it. Gentlemen, thank you so much as always. This has been a pleasure.
Oh, absolutely. And
yeah, thank you.
Oh, no, thank you guys. And we will see you all
no!
next episode.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. All right, bye.
Bye.
Bye.